Sunday Showcase. I'm Damiano Pietropaolo, and I'm here at the Royal George Theatre in Niagara-on-the-Lake, home of the Shaw Festival, with artistic director Jackie Maxwell for the third of this season's Bell Canada reading series. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, Damiano.
Well, I understand we're about to hear something a little different.
We are indeed. The Place of the Lion. It's a metaphysical thriller about alien powers let loose to walk on Earth.
Sort of Hitchcock meets Orson Welles?
Absolutely. It's by Charles Williams, and it's directed and adapted by our resident director, Neil Monroe, who, as you know, can be relied upon to find many a rare gem.
Yes, indeed. Williams is very much a forgotten figure of literature these days, though, is he not?
Yeah, unfortunately. He was writing between the two world wars, and he wrote novels that were a mix of religion and romance. And as Neil says, he was wickedly smart with a voice laced with a poet's taste for imagery and high Anglican romance. Now, how does that grab you?
I'm intrigued. Shall we?
After you.
From the top of the bank behind a sparse hedge of thorn, the lioness stared at the Hertfordshire Road.
She moved her head from side to side.
Then, suddenly, she became rigid.
As if she'd scented prey.
Crouched lower.
Body trembling.
Tail swishing.
No sound.
It's dark.
Quentin Sabbat.
It is, rather.
Anthony Durant.
I don't see this bus of yours.
No.
They were strolling in the dark.
I was just thinking, it might be a good thing if we all had to draw a map of our own mind, say every 5 years. You know, all the chief towns marked, all the arterial roads connecting one idea to another and to another.
Yes, with all those abandoned by-lanes you never go down because the farms they lead to are all empty.
That's right. Lots of arrows showing directions to pointless places.
Yes. Like that light bobbing about over there. See it?
Lanterns?
Dozen or so.
Mortality, as usual, carries its own star.
Oi! You there!
I say, do you think at last I found someone who needs me?
Oh, steady on. They're armed.
Four or five had rifles.
Two with pitchforks.
Others, heavy sticks.
Didn't you hear the warning that's been sent out?
Sorry?
Sent a man out. Where have you been? You didn't meet him.
Sitting on a gate, waiting for a bus, old bean.
There'll be some wait, lad. Bus don't
fact
run this
is,
place.
There's a lioness loose somewhere around here, and we're after her.
Devil there is.
Got away from a damn wild beast.
Oh,
so
you gentlemen had better get straight ahead, fast as you can.
Oh, well, all the best.
Good hunting. What enormous fun. Lioness. What should we do if we see it?
Bolt, I should think.
They were walking faster.
Do you save me by luring it after you, or do I save you by luring it after me?
You save me, thank
you. Faster.
Do you still think ideas are more dangerous than material things? That's what you said at lunch.
All material danger is limited, whereas interior danger
breaking
is unlimited.
Breaking into a light canter now.
I think this lioness is more pressing danger than any of your intellectual terrors are likely to be.
Roger that.
Running.
There. I see it.
A long, low body had slithered down the right-hand bank of the road.
Paused for a moment.
Turned its head.
Turned its head.
Switched its tail. And then it began to move in their direction.
But the two young men were
the
up
two young men were up to
over a gate
and down a short garden path into the dark shelter of an old house.
Into the dark shelter of an old house.
The moon wasn't high, and it lay faintly on the garden.
On the gate.
On the road.
And there,
halting on her way,
the lioness.
I say, look. There.
Another figure appeared on the lawn.
A man.
We ought to warn him.
No! Best to stay
quiet. The lioness, as if startled, made one leap over
the gate. One leap over the gate and her flying form
seemed to collide with the man.
The shadow settled.
The shadow settled and the garden became clear.
Anthony and Quentin saw before them
a man lying on the ground.
And standing over him, the shape of a full-grown
and tremendous lion.
Then, majestically,
It passed onward and entered into the dark shadows of the trees.
That was a lion.
Well, what about the lioness?
Two escaped animals?
Good Lord.
Yes.
Quite.
The mysterious Mr. Beringer.
Hello!
It was the man with whom the friends had talked before.
Oh, it's you two, is it?
He went straight to the prostrate man.
Touched him here and there.
No wounds. What happened?
We saw the lioness. He did too.
Name's Beringer. Lives here.
Let's get him inside.
However, when they tried to slip their arms underneath, they could not at first lift him.
When at last their combined efforts did raise him, he was carried along the front of the house. But when they tried,
turn the corner, they found an unplaceable difficulty in doing so.
We're stuck.
Can't move.
Got to.
Can't.
Got to.
What's happening?
Yes. Now, here, on the bed.
By the way, it was a lioness, wasn't it? Not a lion?
There's no lions in these parts, lad. This is England.
Well, if it is, and there isn't, and you're sure, you must be right, eh, what?
I suppose this is all a bit of a joke to you.
No, I wasn't joking.
Actually, he's renowned for not having a sense of humor. come on, Quentin, we're in the way.
Yeah. Nice to have run into you all. Ta-ta.
Now there's a queer pair.
Yes. Fit for what, would you think?
The Idola and the Angeli.
Delmer's tie had a bad night, and she particularly needed her sleep in order to be quite fresh every day to cope with her thesis.
The Pythagorean influence on Abelard.
There were moments when she wished that she hadn't chosen quite so remote a thesis.
It was just that all the later scholars had been done to death, whereas the Pythagorean influence on Abelard seemed to have been left for her to do to death.
She had so far a list of
18 close identifications.
Yes, it's really quite awful.
23 cases of probable traditional views.
We hear that he's quite comatose.
And 85 less distinct relationships.
You didn't really know Mr. Beringer that well, did you? He was such a wonderful man. Well, he probably still is. But of course, if he's unconscious, I doubt if he'd be quite up to it. So we all thought how marvelous it would be if you could see your way to taking his place.
I'm sorry, my way?
We thought you might fill Mr. Beringer's place and read us something. Something in Plato, perhaps. Mr. Beringer was particularly partial to Plato.
Well, I do have a little something on the relation of Platonic and medieval thought.
I knew you'd help us.
It's called the Idola and the Angeli. It's a comparison between the sub-Platonic philosophers on the one side and the commentators on Dionysius the Areopagite on the other.
Yes! You tell us all about it tonight. Thank you so very much. Goodbye, then, till 8:30.
After tidying up her papers, Damaris Ty went in to dinner.
And in to her father.
Dad.
Never seen so many butterflies. There's a great big one in the oak at the top of the hill. Couldn't recognize it. Brown, gold. Oh, a lovely, lovely thing. Glinting and glowing. Oh, good mutton.
Really, father. If it was as beautiful as all that, how can you go on eating mutton and potatoes? Plato says that one should rise from the phenomenal to the abstract beauty and thence to the absolute.
Well, mutton helps butterflies and butterflies help mutton. And it was a marvel, you know. They don't come in brown and gold.
In a rare mood of benignity.
Due no doubt to her hopes for her paper,
she began to talk about the improvements in the maid's cooking.
If time had to be wasted, it had better be wasted on neutral instead of irritating subjects.
And so, Damaris competently wasted time until it was time to get ready for the meeting.
Butterflies and butterflies help mutton.
At the meeting.
Well, I adore Shakespeare. He stands absolute master of his own intellectual landscape.
Brutally lyrical, isn't he?
It's a shocking plagiarism.
Oh,
When he wrote Egypt, you are dying, somebody else had already said England is dying because the sheep are eating men.
Hello,
Sir Thomas More or something like that.
You all heard that our dear leader, Mr. Berenger, has passed into a state of unconsciousness. However, it seemed a pity to omit our monthly meeting merely because our leader is in, shall I say, another state. Therefore, Miss Damaris Tye, known to all of us as a deep student of philosophy, has agreed to speak to us tonight on a subject of much mutual interest. What is it, dear?
The Eidola and the Angeli.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Damaris Tye.
Ladies and gentlemen, I fear I'm a very inadequate substitute for Mr. Berenger. But perhaps what
There's
I have to
smell.
Offer may not be altogether
smell.
Without
that
interest.
Smell.
Philosophy has always been a favorite subject of human study. In our age of science and learning, we appreciate philosophical thinking through the ages with sympathy, if not agreement. For instance, I'm not prepared to call Plato the gross rat.
What has
was once done?
Onerous. Where is it coming from?
In the Middle Ages, there were supposed to be various classes of angels who were given exact names. In descending order.
Oh, look,
they were...
Oh, my God. It's on the floor. It's the snake. It's the crowned snake.
Oh. Can you see the snake, Mrs. Rockbottom?
No, Mr. Richardson. Dora Wilmot may be a fool, but she's always been sincere. Can't you see it? Look. Well, Dora, dear, what's it doing? I can't see it. It's climbing the bones.
Well, why do you ask?
It's looking around.
For goodness sake.
I have to get out of here.
The room lay empty and still. There passed across it then a dim form, which, heavy, long, and coiling, issued slowly through the open window into a silent world.
Antony and Damaris.
Oh, Damaris, I think you're just playing with me.
Don't be absurd, Antony.
I come and I go, and you will and you won't.
Antony, I cannot think about marriage until I've got my degree. Now, of course, if you think more of yourself than of me...
Well, of course I do. Who doesn't? I'm not a saint or some kind of Alexandrian Gnostic.
Antony, look, we both like each other.
Oh, Damaris, I don't like you a bit. I think you're detestable. But I'm wildly in love with you, and I know you're not. But I also know that your only chance of salvation is to marry me.
Salvation? From what, I'd like to know?
From who you really are. Nobody else will give you such a difficult and unpleasant time. With me, you'll never be comfortable, but you may be glorious. Better think it over.
I hate being bad friends with you.
I hate being good friends with you. Come here.
Why?
Oh, darling.
What, darling?
Oh, my God. What's the matter with your drains? And now it's gone. It was like a corpse. It's your drains.
No. I smelled it last night at the meeting.
It's your drains. Anyhow, I must be off. Goodbye. And do think about your salvation.
If I ever feel in need of it, I will.
I love you.
The coming of the butterflies.
The next day, revolving the possibilities of a lioness being changed into a lion and Damaris being converted into a warm and loving creature, Antony walked into the road which he and Quentin had turned 2 days earlier.
There's a lovely golden brown one here, somewhere.
Damaris Tye's father.
Complete with the paraphernalia of active entomology.
Oh, what butterflies must have been once, eh?
Anthony liked to talk to Mr. Tye.
Not much to be left of them sooner or later, except in the zoos. When we bring the trees down...
The trees won't be cut down. What about irrigation and whatnot?
Oh, they'll be tame for us, and they'll be artificial butterflies, but the real thing will have gone.
Anthony's eyes passed over the smooth grass of the lawn where, two nights before, he had seen the form of a lion.
Suddenly, with
startled amazement, he saw that in the center of the garden,
almost directly above the place
where he had seen the lion, there floated a butterfly.
A terrific, colossal butterfly.
2 feet or more across, from wingtip to wingtip.
It moved upward in spiral flutterings.
From which it seemed directly to fall close to the ground.
And then began again its upward sweep, again
hovered and again fell.
Another brilliancy, much smaller, flashed through the air. It was an ordinary butterfly making its way towards its more gigantic image. And another followed
it.
Anthony caught his companion's arm.
Mr. Tye gobbled at the soft, glowing vision.
After times unreckoned had passed, lesser grew the clouds.
Smaller the flight.
Now but a score.
Now but a dozen.
Until the whole ravishing army had vanished.
The great butterfly of the garden rose.
Curvetting, it passed upwards towards the roof of the house.
Settled there for a moment, and then swept beyond it and vanished.
Glory! Glory! Oh, that I should have seen it! Blessed sight! What have I done to deserve it?
I say, it's all more than a tad queer, isn't it? Lions, butterflies, snakes, that stench. Well, I don't know what it is, really.
No. Yes, I'll be going home now, feeling rather undone.
Quite. I shan't come back with you, if you don't mind.
No.
A little meditation, I fancy, is what I need.
Yes. Quite, yes. Cheerio, then.
Quite, yes.
And Anthony wandered off towards the station, making his way slowly back home towards London.
The two camps.
Back in their London flat, Anthony contemplated Quentin with bewilderment.
All on edge tonight. Don't know what's got into me. Yes, I do. It's all these damned lions and lionesses.
Oh, I must be wrong. It couldn't have been. I feel like an insult to a geometrical pattern.
I don't know what it is, but it's something, and I know that whatever that something is, it's after me.
Here, have a cigarette.
No, I don't really want one.
Oh, come along now. Have a cigarette.
All right, but don't bully me. It doesn't help. Good God, what's that?
It's the doorbell.
Don't let them in.
All right, all right.
Tell them to... we're not here.
All right, Quentin. Quentin, this is Mr. Foster of Smedham.
Short, thick-set, firm face, large eyes.
Sit down, Mr. Foster, won't you?
Aye.
Now, why don't you tell my friend what you told me?
Miss Tye told me that you'd been to Mr. Berenger's house, and I thought it'd do no harm to compare notes.
Now, I understand from Miss Tye that one of the ladies thought she saw a snake.
She thinks she saw a snake. Mr. Tye thinks he saw butterflies.
Butterflies?
He's been praying to his cabinets of butterflies for a day and a half now. Miss Tye was inclined to impatience.
Praying? Anthony, you were with him. What did you see?
Well, thousands of little fellows all flying into one huge fellow, and then they were gone.
Aaron's rod.
I beg your pardon?
Aaron's rod.
Saying it twice doesn't help.
That's the one that was turned into a snake and swallowed the other snakes.
I think the magicians of the Pharaoh may have seen Miss Wilmot's snake, and all their shapely wisdom was swallowed by it as the butterflies of the fields this afternoon were swallowed.
And Mr. Tye was praying to what?
To the gods that he knew.
The gods?
I came here to find out what you know of them.
Aren't we making rather an absurd fuss over this?
Don't think to escape the gods, young man, if they're really on your track.
I don't believe in the gods. I believe in London and the things we know.
Gentlemen, I have spent my life trying to see into the world of principles from which this world comes.
Dash that by me again, will you?
I believe that the world is created by the entrance of certain great principles into aboriginal matter, the powers of wisdom, courage, beauty, and so on. And when that which is behind them intends to put a new soul into matter, it is by a peculiar mingling of these powers that a child is born. And by this gentle introduction of them, mankind is maintained. In the animals, the powers are less mingled, for there each is shown to us in his own shape. The powers are the archetypes of the beasts and much more, but we needn't go into that at the moment.
That's a relief.
There is a peculiar sympathy between these powers and the beasts of our world. But if one of those animals should be brought within the terrific influence of a power, of one particular idea, the matter of the beast might be changed into the image of the idea, and our world, following that idea, might be drawn into their world. That is what I think is happening.
That's insane, isn't it?
What about this Beringer fellow?
It's through him that this world is passing into that. He and the house are the center.
Which is why everything happens in his garden?
Yes, if I'm right. If all this world is passing into that, then our knowledge will more and more be a knowledge of that and not of this. More and more everything will be received into its original. Animals, vegetables, everything.
Hold on, old chap. Are you talking about the end of the world?
Animals, vegetables, what about people?
Some will welcome it, as Mr. Tai has done, and they will be joined to that power which they best serve. Some will disbelieve. Damaris Tai, for example. They will find out then what they do believe. Some will hate it and run from it, as you do, Mr. Quentin. They will be hunted. Nothing will escape.
Can't the breach be closed?
You think you can govern the principles of creation?
I don't know, but I insist on being allowed to find out for myself.
You think you can stand against them?
If they are part of me, as you say they are, perhaps I might. Perhaps the authority which is in me over me shall be in me over them.
What?
Like the rest of the world, you don't know necessity when you see it. Good night, gentlemen.
He's a charmer, isn't he?
Why don't you go to bed, old thing?
Yes. Well, it'll be sweet dreams after all that, won't it?
Now do go away and let me think, or I shall be no good to anyone.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Damaris, my dear, don't worry, darling. The lion and the dragon will we tread underfoot.
Servile fear.
Quentin, we need to go back to Smetham. Back to the scene of the crime, as it were.
We're half a mile, not even out of bed yet.
I should like very much to hear whether anyone else is seeing things.
Not a chance. Old boy, I don't intend to find myself within 100 miles of that haunted little hamlet. I am a Londoner. And a Londoner I have definitely...
And so...
And definitively decided to remain.
That afternoon, the two young men left London to wander once again out onto the Beringer Road.
The sun was hot.
My God, the sun's hot.
June was drawing to a rich close.
They both stood looking at the Beringer house.
The grass was dry and brown.
The earth hard and cracked.
Well, it looks quiet enough. Those sheep don't seem disturbed.
Well, they're stupid. Aren't they?
I see. On the top of that rise. Do you see?
Good God.
The lion.
Passing slowly through the trees.
It moved with a stately ferocity.
The vast head turning one way and then the other.
Perhaps now would be a suitable moment to run for it.
No. If that is what is in me, then I may be able to control it. And if not...
And if not...
We'll see what a service revolver can do.
They left the gate and went on along the road.
The trees, however, after a few minutes, shut the beast out of sight.
Oh, come on, it's gone.
Quentin looked back over his shoulder.
Let's get back to town, shall we?
Quentin's eyes grew wide and blind with terror.
Anthony swung round.
It was larger.
It was mightier.
It moved like a walled city.
Like a siege tower.
Each terrible paw, as it set down, sank into the firm ground as if into mud.
And was plucked forth without effort.
Anthony could feel the strength of his body flowing out of him.
He began to tremble.
To gasp. Am I dying?
Was he dying?
Perhaps that was it.
Perhaps he was dying.
He was riding against some terrific wind.
Balancing upon the instinctive powers of his spirit.
If this is in me, and I reach beyond it...
Suddenly, he was flying.
Looking down on a wide stretch of land.
Forest.
Plain.
River.
Where huge saurians were creeping slowly up from the waters, coming into sight.
And then disappearing.
He was sweeping down towards the ground.
Plunging towards a prehistoric world.
Behind this lumbering vastidity, suddenly, his own world broke out into being through that other.
There was a wild minute in which mammoths and dinotheria wandered among the hedges of English fields.
And in the midst of that confused vision, again, suddenly, he found himself lying
found
on the ground.
Found myself lying on the ground in a recovered inner peace. No sign of the lion. No sign of Quentin. Get to my feet. All of the countryside lies still, silent, empty. Only high above, a winged something disports itself in the full blaze of the afternoon sun. Precisely a pattern of these powers, and the present general pattern of the world is being violently changed into another pattern, the original pattern. Oh, damn, what's happening to Quentin? And what about Damaris? If that childish ignorance and arrogance ever met these kinds of dangers face to face, can I get her to London? How long would London be safe? And damn it, where the hell is Quentin? I have to be steady. I have to be quiet. Remember, man was meant for control, to be lord of his own nature, and to accept the authority that had been given to Adam over all manner of beasts, as the lovely antic fable goes. Can I take dominion over the beasts of heaven? I have to admit, I'm feeling a trifle microcosmic at the moment. Wish I had any prospect of exercising dominion over Damaris, let alone the known universe.
Investigations.
Really, people do come at the most inconvenient times.
He's one of my cousin's people on that little paper of theirs, the two camps.
Mr. Anthony Durant.
Mr. Durant, Mrs. Rockbotham thinks she knows you. Do sit down.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Rockbotham.
Now, what can we do for you?
Well, I've really only called to ask after Mr. Berenger. He was to do an article for the two camps on the symbolism of the cosmic myths. I've only just heard of his illness.
Yes, I'm afraid he is ill.
Seriously?
My dear, perhaps Mr. Durant would like to see Mr. Beringer.
Well, he won't gain much. He's unconscious. Still, I may take it that you represent a widespread concern.
Oh, very.
Well, then, if you'd care to come out with me tomorrow morning, about 12?
Well, thank you very much.
Well, that'll be capital. You'll excuse me now, will you? I have to pop off for a bit of surgery.
Don't you go, Mr. Durant. Sit down and tell me how things are with the two camps.
Antony felt the rest of the afternoon gather around him in a sense of timeless despair as Mrs. Rockbottom's mouth opened and
opened and closed and seemed to chew and swallow
the very air in the dining room.
And Antony, along with it,
a touch of Ephesus.
With her address in his right hand, Antony rapped on Miss Dora Wilmot's door with his left.
The maid ushered him in at once.
In a small, neatly furnished room, he found not only the lady whom he assumed to be Miss Wilmot,
but also the gentleman whom he knew to be Mr. Foster standing by her.
Thank you for seeing me, Miss Wilmot. I've come to inquire about Mr. Beringer and what happened Wednesday night.
The woman puzzled him.
She was in the queerest manner, gathered up in her chair.
Eyes half closed.
Head
swaying.
Slightly.
And why should we tell you anything, Mr. Durant?
I admit that I'm much more inclined to accept your hypothesis than I was.
Hypothesis?
But I believe in my own.
And that is?
I believe that I must try myself against these things.
And if they are in you, how will you do it? Will you set yourself against yourself? For without them you could not be. And if you struggle against us, whom do you think shall triumph? I think, Mr. Durant, you would be very wise to cease.
The last word indescribably prolonged itself in the twilight.
The sound ran round the walls as if the very room were alive with sibilance.
Foster's slight movement forward escaped him.
Dora Wilmot's body, crouching deeper into the chair, escaped him.
In a flash, the woman slid in one involved movement from the chair.
From the chair in which she had sat half-coiled and from where she lay on the floor at his feet.
Her arms went up and twisted themselves around his waist.
At the same time, the man sprang forward and upward, head thrust out.
Head thrust out as if in design upon his throat.
All around him in the room were noises of hissing, snarling. Antony felt himself falling. With one tremendous movement, he threw the man's body off and then caught the woman's hair and tore at it until her arms unclasped and she too fell away.
His enemies lay still,
shining eyes fixed on him.
Sorry to be a bother, but I'll stick to my own hypothesis, if you don't mind.
He found the maid hovering in the little hall.
She was gazing at his broken collar.
Not to worry. Just a touch of Ephesus.
Ephesus, sir?
I can't give you the reference, but your mistress will. It's where St. Paul had trouble with the beasts. You ask her. Cheerio.
Marcella Victorinus of Bologna.
With his address in his right hand, Antony rapped on Mr. Richardson's door with his left.
The maid ushered him in at once.
In a small, neatly furnished room, he found Mr. Richardson, village bookseller and antiquarian.
Ah, I've been expecting you, Mr. Durant.
If he turns into a centipede,
Antony thought,
I'll step on him.
Sit down. Please sit down.
Mrs. Rockbotham gave me your name. You attended the meeting the other night.
Indeed. Most eventful.
I called on Miss Wilmot. Mr. Foster was there.
And which of them was responsible for the collar?
Foster.
Ah, I suspected something like this. Scotch.
I don't know why they should attack me, please, or why whatever's in them should attack me.
Foster's strong, Wilmot's weak. There's not much meekness in either of them. With these powers abroad, as it were, it's their type that will be the first to feel them. Here you are.
You know what's going on. Thank you.
I do. You're welcome.
Then, what's going on?
Richardson leaned forward and picked up from the table
a very fat,
old manuscript.
This is the De Angelis of Marcellus Victorinus of Bologna, published in the year 1514 at Paris and dedicated to Leo X. May I read you an extract? The orders we have received from antiquity enlarge our knowledge of those secret things which are in heaven.
By such orders know we the shapes and symbols whereby divine celestials are expressed, but in riddles. But in riddles, lest evil men work sorcery on the appearance of them, which would be dragon-like flung forth from the void into the world. This dragon is the power of the lion, according to the hierarchy of the composed wonders of heaven. Now there's more. These specters, being invoked, have power upon those who adore them and transform them into their very terrible likeness, destroying them with great moanings and so on, etc., etc., etc. The idea seems to be that the energies of these orders can exist in separation from the intelligence which is in them when they're in heaven, the other world. How's your scotch?
Yes, please.
And that if deliberately or accidentally you invoke the energy without the intelligence, well, you're likely eventually to be pretty considerably done for. Here you are.
Anything else in there? Thank you.
No, not really. Oh, he did he rams on about the seraphim without really giving you a clear idea of the who, why, and what of it all. Now, I want to ask you something. I heard about this afternoon. How did you escape from the shape of the lion?
I was flying, not a plane.
Yes, thought as much. See here, the Lord brought you out of Egypt on the back of a strong eagle. The eagle, you see? The celestial symbol of self-worth.
Yes, well, how do you suppose one goes about getting in touch with this celestial symbol?
Within, and one place else, young man.
Berenger's house.
Yes.
I was afraid of that. No other way.
Would you take it if there was?
I would have preferred a choice.
Soda?
Please.
The fugitive. Damaris had gone out for a walk. Not because she had wanted to, but because, as she had told her father, it seemed the only way of getting a little peace. In general, Damaris associated peace with her study, books, and her manuscripts, rather than with the sky, the hills, and the country roads. Peace to her was not a state to be achieved, but a necessary condition of her daily work. And peace, therefore, as often happens, evaded her continually. In a convulsive patience, therefore, she walked firmly out of her house, out of the town, and up the rising ground that lay about it. On top of it all, the relation between divine perfection and creation was proving annoyingly complicated. Plato's absolute beauty is fine because it isn't necessarily conscious of the world. But the God of Abelard is conscious of the world. But that consciousness can't be necessary for God, because nothing but God could be necessary for God. For goodness sake!
You shouldn't be there. You should hide.
Mr. Savitt? Quentin, where are you?
In the bushes. Where you should be.
What are you doing?
Keeping out of its way.
Quentin, do get up and talk sensibly.
Look, get up the road a bit and dig yourself a hole.
Let go of me, Mr. Savitt.
Listen.
Really, this is too much.
You crawl along the ditch. You're all right. It's too big to get into the ditch.
I'm going to kick you.
Shut up. Listen. Quiet. Listen. Oh, God. I knew it. Get away from me, you bitch. You told it where to find me. Bitch.
Far off in the sky, Damaris saw a winged shape.
It had to be very large to be so visible so high up.
And then it flew off.
The London offer.
Damaris, you saw him and you didn't help him.
Don't talk at me like that. It was a great shock to me.
You've got a worse shock than that coming to you.
Why do you always talk as if I don't know anything and then expect me to marry you?
Because I love you. I'm sorry. I came here to ask you to come to London with me.
Why on earth should I go to London?
Quentin, God save him, offered you a hole in a ditch. I'm offering you London.
Anthony, there's no earthly reason
why... The reason is a very unearthly one. The princes of heaven are loose in the world, and you are not going to know what to do about it.
Anthony, you're really going to have to understand that I'm not...
Something drives Quentin mad. Something makes your father pray to butterflies. Something frightens everyone at the Berenger house, and something obsessed Foster and your friend Miss Wilmot.
She's not my friend.
Quiet! Now, you can stop and meet it if you choose. Or you can come to my flat in London, for a few days' grace at least.
I don't understand you a bit. I think you're trying to be kind, and I'm sorry about your friend. Perhaps if it hadn't been so sudden.
Ah.
You see, I was preoccupied with that bothering business of the divine perfection.
Oh, divine perfection. It's a problem. Yes, all right, goodbye. I love you. We may yet meet. at Philippi.
And then, much to her surprise, he left.
The pit in the house.
In the car.
Beastly amount of thunder.
No rain.
Yes, and no lightning.
On the way to the Behringer house.
Some kind of electrical nucleus, I suppose. Well, doctor's life, you know. All sorts of weather, all sorts of people. Sometimes, though, I'd as soon be doctor to a zoo. Doctor's joke, of course.
Talking of zoos, did they ever catch that lioness they were all after?
Ah, well, they think it must have gone in the other direction. I suppose that means in the direction they didn't go. Here we are.
The house. Silent, secret, with a potentiality beyond all knowledge.
What indescribable behemoth of might and beauty was even now, perhaps, dragging itself down the stairs.
Actually, the only behemoth...
And though she was fat, she was hardly that.
...was the housekeeper.
She let them in and ushered them upstairs to the waiting male nurse.
The nurse took them into the Behringer sick room.
Behringer's eyes were wide open, but unseeing.
For a moment, Anthony thought or fancied they'd flicked into life. Not common life, but as if a dangerous vitality had threatened him.
Quite comatose. Shall we go downstairs?
As Anthony got to the door, he couldn't resist...
He couldn't resist a backward glance.
Then he realized he was barring the doctor's way.
Oh, sorry.
Not Dr. Rockwatham passed through with a little bow of acknowledgement.
Anthony closed the door behind him and stepped onto the landing.
It makes it so awkward, doesn't it, when there's no way of discovering where his relations
God,
live?
Where am I?
If any,
what's happening?
Below him was the shadowy form of a staircase, but below those fell great cliffs. It was bottomless, a vast pit.
Above him, the same great cliffs, extending incalculably high, and above them, a cloudy white circle of what seemed like sky.
A winged form.
In the sky.
Coming down in spirals.
A giant of an eagle kind.
Riding in the void, flying without wings, securely existing by movement and balance among the dangers of that other world, I grow into my proper office and feel the flickers of prophecy pass through me. I'm moving now amid sudden shapes and looming powers. The strength of lion, subtlety of serpent, loveliness of butterfly. And through them, I know this world isn't open to me, and I know that my service on earth is not completed. And as I adore these beautiful, serene, and terrible manifestations, they vanish
around. It makes it so awkward, doesn't it, when there's no way of discovering where his relations live, if any, of course. Shall we be off?
They began to move toward the door.
Dr. Rockbotham nodded goodbye to the housekeeper.
Anthony followed his example.
Still thundering.
Anthony could have said...
That's not thunder. It's the language of the guardian of the angelical world.
But Dr. Rockbotham seemed insufficiently sensitive enough to the world of the immortals to appreciate the revelation.
The conversion of Damaris Tai.
This is a graph of human thought from 500 BC to AD 1200, showing respectively the relation of official, cultural, and popular thought to the ideas of personalized and depersonalized supernatural powers. In this graph, it is quite easy to see what attitudes men down through... Men down through the ages towards their gods. The smell. Oh, my God, the smell.
As she staggered backwards, the bright sunlight that was over her papers suddenly disappeared.
A heavy blackness obliterated the room.
Damaris glanced round to see what dark cloud had filled the sky.
There was a terrific beak protruding through the open window and
into
the room.
Two huge flapping wings.
Two horrible red eyes.
And that overwhelming stink.
Its eyes held her.
Its beak jerking at her as if stabbing.
She had a vision of teeth.
It was moving.
It was coming in.
No!
She flung herself back and burst through her study door into
banging
the landing
the door,
beyond.
Closed behind her.
She looked up and saw the shape of the walls and ceiling growing fainter against a vast plain stretching emptily away
to where at the horizon a heavy and inflamed sky sank to meet it.
A tiny figure from far away was coming towards her.
But human.
The pterodactyl wheeled in the sky.
She returned to the approaching figure.
A man in a large cloak.
Head shaved in a tonsure.
Abelard? Peter Abelard?
Oh, quantum.
Singing as he came.
The horrible shadowed presence of the pterodactyl suddenly and angrily swept down out of the sky.
She shrieked and stumbled
and
fell.
And it caught her.
And it caught her.
And it caught her.
I caught you just in time, didn't I, dearest?
Anthony. Oh, I'm sorry.
What are you sorry for?
I've behaved so badly.
That doesn't matter between us.
What did I see?
You saw what you know. And because it's the only thing you know, you saw it like that. I tried to warn you.
I think I ought to go and look for Quentin.
Why?
It's either that or Abelard. My father doesn't want me.
Your father's dead, my dear.
Is he?
I'm afraid he is.
I should have loved him more.
Damaris searched her heart, and in the dark places where the images of obscene profanations dwelt, they both stayed. For a long time.
The hunting of Quentin.
Damaris swung along the country road where she'd had her first encounter with young Quentin. Even in his wildness, Quentin had kept some thought for others.
Now she was at the very spot where they had first met.
Well, if I can be of any use to him, who in his madness had been greater than me in my sanity, here I am.
Far and fast, there came to her the sound of something.
She jumped over a stile, came into a wide meadow, and froze.
They were running along the farther edge of the meadow.
Two figures.
The first was a man.
The second, a man too, it seemed.
But whether it was going on 2 feet or four, she couldn't tell.
The first was torn and bleeding, his face inhuman with terror and exhaustion, one cheek bitten and gnawed.
Quentin?
There were tears on her face for very distress of love.
He rushed on past her,
round the meadow.
Now the second form approached
her. It seemed to be leaping rather than running.
The face was as inhuman as the other.
But while that was man blasted,
this was man brutalized.
Snarling.
A wing
snuffing,
poured from its
snorting
open mouth and flung her backward till she reeled.
She reeled against the stile.
What to do? What?
Some other thing came into her line of vision.
A solitary lamb moved towards her.
And then, across the meadow, skimmed the sudden shadow of an eagle.
She moved towards the lamb as it advanced to meet her.
They came together.
And the innocence that sprang in her knew a greater innocence.
She looked again at that terrible hunt.
It had been close after midnight when the creature that had been Mr. Foster had scented, trailed, and attacked.
Quentin?
Her voice came crying to what function of his brain was left.
He broke inward across the meadow.
Quentin!
The voice of Damaris seeming to guide him.
He came down in front of her and she threw herself over his body.
Threw herself over his body to protect it.
At the feet of the lamb, they lay.
The pursuing creature very softly began to creep around them.
The foster thing, by some interior power, was being drawn off.
A wind surrounded it, and it was lifted and hung absurdly in the air, an inch or two off the ground. That which was within him rushed to mingle with that which was without, and in dreadful pain, he, it, Foster, ceased to be.
Slowly, Damaris and Quentin crossed the meadow and reached the stile and retraced their steps along the hard country road.
Quentin from his flight.
Damaris from her seclusion.
Until at last they came to the house where, as twilight had begun to fall the day before,
her father had drawn his last breath in final surrender to the beauty that had possessed him.
The place of friendship.
So you found him.
He's asleep upstairs now.
You've changed.
Quentin will be himself again in no time. Yes.
I won't say I'm sorry about your father. I think he ended his business. And now I must get on with mine.
You'll let me come with you?
Come on.
Where are we going?
To the field where you found Quentin.
In a short while, they were out of town again and coming to the stile where Damaris had been with Quentin.
Her breath came quicker.
They had arrived.
She looked at Anthony.
You'll stay here.
Lightly, he laid his hand on the stile and vaulted over.
It was almost dark, and the shadows were confusing.
At a distance, the figure of Anthony was different somehow.
Suddenly he stood still, then turned a little.
On his shoulder was perched a huge bird, and as he began to call, it spread its wings and closed them again.
He was calling.
He called and commanded.
The forest all round was in movement.
Living creatures showed themselves on its edge.
By the names that were the ideas, he called them.
and the ideas who are the principles of everlasting creation heard him.
The principles of everlasting creation who are the cherubim and seraphim of the eternal.
They were returning.
Summoned by the authority of man from their incursion into the world of man.
Suddenly, there fell over the whole scene a strange and lovely clearness, shed from the wings of a soaring wonder
that left the shoulder where it had reposed and flew, scattering light.
Scattering light.
The intermingled foliage of the trees of knowledge and of life received it.
Amid those branches, the eagle, which was the living act of science, sank and rested.
Below the tree, the human stood, and on either side of him stood the shapes of the lion and the lamb.
In and for that exalted moment, all acts of peace that then had being through the world were deepened and knew their own nature more clearly.
Antony looked on the beasts and seemed to speak to them, and they slowly withdrew.
On the very edge of the mystery, the lion looked back, half turned towards the way it had gone.
Its eyes met those of the man who faced it.
He bade the Angelico pass back and close the breach.
It turned and moved away.
The guard that protected Earth was set again.
And the interposition of the mercy veiled the destroying energies from the weakness of men.
Antony leapt the stile, stretching out his hand for her.
And she came to him and caught it.
Panting from his rush, he smiled at her.
Panting from her vigil, she breathed all herself back. After a little.
I say, you're not cold, are you?
They began to walk slowly home. It's not very far.
Still, I wish you'd got a coat or something.
No, I'm not cold.
The Place of the Lion by Charles Williams, the third in this year's Bell Canada reading series from the Shaw Festival. It was adapted and directed by Neil Monroe. In the cast, you heard Susie Burnett as Damaris Tye, Ben Carlson as Antony, Gillian Cook as Mrs. Rockbottom, Lynn Cormack as the nurse, the maid, and Mrs. Portman, Sherry Flett as Dora Wilmot, Lauren Kennedy as Mr. Foster and Dr. Rockbottom, Duncan Stewart as Mr. Tye, Mr. Richardson and Lorigan, and William Vickers as Quentin. The Bell Canada reading series is recorded live at the Royal George Theatre in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario. With special thanks to Bill Talbot, Jim Smagata, and Amy Jewell. The recording engineer was Joe Mahoney, and the producer of Bell Canada Reading Series is Barbara Worthy. That's it for tonight. Tune in next week for Tony Van Bridge's GKC, a portrayal of that literary giant, Gilbert Keith Chesterton, when we return with another play from the Shaw Festival. If you would like to send us a letter, please address it to Sunday Showcase, Box 500, Station A, Toronto M5W 1E6, and send emails to sunshowcase@toronto.cbc.ca. Just a reminder that tonight's Bell Canada reading series will be repeated tomorrow night on Monday Night Playhouse at 9 p.m. on CBC Radio 2. For Sunday Showcase, I'm Damiano Pietropaolo. Good night.